Well, hello everyone. This is Lorraine Perry, the Productivity Queen, and welcome to our special topic call for my Productivity Coaching Club members. And today's special call is how to manage your emails, master your technology, and increase your productivity. Have you found the constant flow of emails, phone calls, voicemails, and text messages is draining your productivity? You may have had training in traditional time management principles, but you're still struggling to combine it all with the technology that's now part of your work. It leaves most people feeling frustrated and reactive. So on today's call, you're going to learn the four keys to a high-performance workplace, how to stop being a slave to email and master your inbox, how to transform the technology you have sitting in front of you into your own personal assistant. You're also going to learn how to use simple innovation strategies to leverage your time and achieve more with less effort, how to create momentum every day, and how to maintain your energy levels throughout the day to maintain your peak state. And just before we get onto the call with our very special guests, I just want to share with you upcoming dates, or the next upcoming date, which is our next question and answer call on Tuesday the 21st of February at 10 a.m. Victorian time. Now that's our question and answer call, and it's your chance as you're working through the home study system to have all your questions answered about what's stopping you being more productive and profitable. Is it your time management, having efficient systems, finding the right team to support you, or maybe it's just your motivation levels? Whatever it is that's causing you to get stuck. It's a powerful call and members gain a heap of benefit on them. So, let's get on to today's special call. Firstly, I'd like to welcome our very special guest, Elliot Hayes from Find the Time. So, welcome, Elliot.
Hello, Lorraine. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you, finally, Elliot. Elliot, could you tell our members a bit about your background, how you got started in your business, and basically where you're at today?
Okay, so my background was originally I was an actor, and because of that I was always doing other jobs in different industries to pay the bill. And one day I ended up managing a retail store and went to give a speech at the local business group on customer service. And when I gave the speech, someone said, oh, you should really be in training and education. And that kind of led into going into that world of running productivity and training programs and so on. And I found the challenge I had was teaching only the traditional time management. Sometimes the problem was that it wouldn't stick with them enough to make a real change. So we started combining that with technology, looking at the email issues and using technology more effectively. And the combination of those two proved to be a pretty good recipe for people to make some changes. So here we are now. This is what we do.
Ah, that's interesting. Now, you are an actor. Now, is that true that actors generally aren't well organized?
Actors are very internally driven, creative people, and that's probably true. Most of them are not very well organized. Yes. But they are very, well, actually, some of them are incredibly disciplined, really good ones, really disciplined. So there's a focus there that is very admirable, and there's something to learn from that in terms of your own productivity.
Yeah. Would you say before you got started doing what you're doing now, because this could mean a lot of hope to people that are, you know, that are very creative, were you fairly well organised prior to doing this business of yours?
Honestly, no.
Good. Okay. It's good for people to hear that.
If you want the honest answer, no.
Yeah, that's no, good. So now that's all
funny.
Changed.
Yeah, it's certainly transformed a lot. But I'll tell you something funny. I was thinking about this the other day. I met a lady who was casting years ago. She had cast the film Evil Angels, and she'd worked with Meryl Streep. And my first question was, what was it like working with Meryl Streep? And the big thing she noted was the supreme focus this woman had to block out all the other things around her that were distracting, like 100 extras in a courtroom scene, and focus on what she had to get done. I thought that was quite a relevant point for our discussion today, because the focus of people is getting so attacked and interrupted by the information and the emails and phone calls that it's a bit of a lost art for some people.
Oh, absolutely. So there you go. So we've set the scene for those of you who are very creative and you feel sometimes it's just too much and you can't, you know, master the technology and the emails. And here we've got someone here who can, who's an expert in that now, and will show you how to do it. So, so first of all, Elliot, do you want to start off with what are the four keys to have a high-performance workplace?
Okay. Probably number one would have to be the mindset. And it's very useful to listen to people who say things like, gee, I'm so busy, or gee, I don't have time for, and I had a friend recently who said, oh, yeah, I just haven't had time for, you know, being able to do, and I said, hang on, let's tell the truth. It's not that you haven't had time, you just haven't made the time. You just haven't made the time to do it. And I met a gentleman who is a highly successful business owner who has a very, very fast-growing company. I can't use his name because he'll kill me if I'm telling this secret formula he has for hiring people, because it's probably against the Equal Opportunity Act. But he is very clear that if people don't have a certain attitude to making things happen, he never hires them. He's also very clear that if they don't have a certain health and fitness level, he doesn't hire them.
Mm.
So he will ask people, are you a morning person or an evening person? And we all know we have our own different cycles there. But in his opinion, people who are morning people make things happen, which leads to the second point, that one big thing you need is energy for a high-performance workplace. And it's something that employers are still getting their heads around, or business owners or employees themselves, but this issue of health is going to continue to knock on the door of businesses, because it's going to cost you money to have staff who are not healthy. And when you've got things like diabetes that are on a massive rise, it's going to be an issue that if you don't have practices or strategies in place to get the most out of your staff from an energy point of view, it doesn't matter how much time management they learn, they're never going to be fully focused and there.
And that's the reason why you get up early in the morning and you do something about it.
Well, yeah, this guy, he felt that people who get up early make more things happen. By 9 o'clock, they've done 10 things when everyone else is just starting. And I can't say that's the Bible, but it certainly worked for him, because the growth he experienced has been incredible. But he only, you know, it's like every person there is running marathons. It's kind of insane. But it was an interesting point. He would never say that legally, because he'd be probably crushed. But he had his own very personal criteria there. So first one, mindset. Second one, energy. Go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, we could just sit on that one all morning, except we've got to cover quite a few things. But I just wanted to bring up the one about the, of course, health and fitness, number one priority. It's, you know, I'm right on board with all that. A certain attitude. Now, you can always train on for the skills, but you cannot train on attitude. And I just wanted to mention something new that happened to us, and as a lot of people know that I'm involved with our Scrum Nation Academy for boys to play rugby.
Does anyone not know, Lorraine?
I'm very passionate about that. But we did have a trainer very recently. His attitude, very disorganized and had an excuse for everything, and his attitude. And it wouldn't matter what we did to try and micromanage him, there was nothing we could do to change that attitude. So we basically gave him the flick because he just wasn't the right person. We did the best we could. And then we have another trainer who, a little bit disorganized, needs a bit rough around the edges. However, the attitude's all there. It's all there, and bit by bit we're moulding him and shaping him into being what we need for our academy. And it's working. So it's so right, you cannot train them on attitude. They've got to have it to start with.
And the big thing is a practical point for listeners, if they have staff or are working with other people, listen to the way they talk about how they get things done. It's a cliche because it's true that if you want something done, give it to a busy person because they make things happen. But more importantly, listen to your own language. Listen to how you talk about how you get things done. And does it sound like you're making excuses? Does it sound like you are reacting all the time? And I'll give you a very quick example. I said to one client of mine, I said, so are you keeping busy? And he took great exception to it. And he said, I'm not keeping busy. I'm engaged in things that are important to me. And I thought, first I thought, well, you're a bit up yourself, aren't you? And I thought, you know what? It's a great response. He says, I don't want to say I'm busy, because that suggests I'm out of control. I'm doing things that I'm engaged with, and that was his mindset. That's the way he goes into each day, and that impacts the way he prioritises and decides to react to different interruptions and so on.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So, all right, so that was the first one. We're still talking about, that's the four
keys.
No,
we kind of got
onto
two there. The one is the mindset, the second one was the energy. I'll make a point on the energy one, which is a practical point for people, that two key things you need to have to be really productive in your system. One is serotonin and one is dopamine. We know this from various scientific studies. For example, highly violent criminals have low levels of serotonin. There's no calm before the storm. There's just something annoys me and I react. So the more calm you are, the more effective you are in getting your work done. So it stands to reason that if you can do anything natural that increases the serotonin, you're going to be better at your job and more productive. Now, instead of turning to the drugs, one thing you can do that's been proven to double the level of serotonin in your system is a brisk, 30-minute brisk walk in the mornings. So it's free of charge, very healthy, but it's been proven to, you know, really boost the serotonin. You can't help but be more productive when you have that flowing through your system. The second thing you need to balance it is the dopamine, which is essentially what fires you up, what keeps you motivated. And they found that what keeps dopamine firing is a goal that excites you. So if you were to think about what you wanted to get done whilst you were going for a walk, you would come into work pretty, pretty focused instead of going rush, straight in, check emails.
So that's really interesting. So if you just thought you had to learn how to use a diary and a to-do list and you're all fit to be organised, you certainly have got another thing coming. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, this issue of energy, all the time management, you're right in what you're saying about the time management, but that's a logical process. You can't avoid the fact that a human being with different emotions and the way they start the day has a big impact on how productive they are. And I put it this way. People all know what it's like when they are unstoppable in getting things done. They also know what it's like when the smallest task is a huge ask. And if that's an energy issue and a motivation issue, much more than a time management issue. But one thing you can do to set the deck in your favour is to get the serotonin firing and to get the dopamine firing, and a brisk walk focusing on a goal that excites you is two things that would really, really help that before you start the day of work.
Fantastic. Okay, so should we move on to how to... What's that?
I like these things because they're free. It doesn't cost anything to do, you know? It's healthy and natural.
Exactly right. Just got to do it. Yeah. So let's move on now to how to stop being a slave to email and master inbox. A lot of people want to know those, you know, the nitty-gritty details about how to do that. So what special tips have you got for us?
Okay, well, I'll be a classic time management person and say that the four Ds that you will have heard of, and I'll cover them if you haven't, are just as relevant today, if not more so. Do it now, deal with it later, delegate it to someone else, or dump it. If anyone's done any kind of time management training, I'm sure you've heard them, Lorraine, these come up, you know, they're roughly the options you've got. The one that tricks people with email is the deal with it later, deferring it to later. Because most people, when they defer it, they'll leave it in the inbox. And I always say, if you were going to get the mail out the front of your house, you would get the mail out of the mailbox, you'd look at it, chuck away the things you don't want. The stuff you wanted to keep, you wouldn't put it back in the mailbox. You would file it somewhere. You'd put it somewhere more useful. But from a technical point of view, that's what people are doing with email. I have one client who had 10,000 emails in their inbox. 10,000. You like that?
Wouldn't the whole thing break down?
He was the boss, so the IT team had given him a lot of latitude with size limit in the mailbox. It's a good point.
Yeah.
But he was the big gun, so he got away with it. But when I said to him, "Why do you keep that many emails in your inbox?" And he said, "I keep them just in case." And that's the common response I hear. Now, the problem with that is if you have more than 40 or 50 emails in your inbox, you are losing time you don't need to when you're trying to find those emails. One of the biggest time wasters in this day and age is trying to find stuff, particularly emails somewhere in the inbox that you know someone sent to you somewhere, but you're trying to scroll through and you click on from and sort through, find all the ones from Lorraine and try and reread the things that you've sent to find the one you're after.
I actually find that very frustrating, and they can come in from the same person from different email addresses. And also doing a search in Outlook for some keywords, still not coming up with the right one.
Well, you raised the point about Outlook. Outlook is probably the most popular email tool. It's probably the one most people use. Other ones are things like Lotus Notes or GroupWise, or people might be Mac users that have their own programs. The question is, whatever technology you use, how much do you know about what it can do? And to give you another average, again, on average, most people know about 10% of what that software can do. The problem is, that's a little like saying, here's the keys to the car, go for a drive. You've never had driving lessons, but you'll figure it out as you go. And if you could join any number of organisations, large or small, and they'll say to you, here's your desk, here's your phone, can you use Outlook? And you'll say, well, I can send emails. Great, you can use Outlook. You're on. And there's so many things, for example, Outlook or Lotus Notes or whatever the tool is can do to act as your personal assistant to help you in dealing with this information coming in, that you're really missing out on it if you don't know what it can do. So there's two issues. One is the time management process, but the second one is know the technology and how that can support it, because the combination is very powerful.
And I'll just step in there. We talk about know the technology, because mainly small business owners would be listening to what we're talking about today.
Yep.
That means you probably don't know. So you then find people who do know. So it could be, a computer trainer, or it could be a virtual assistant, or someone out there who can come in, or you can do it virtually as well, to show you, give you a couple of sessions on how to use your Outlook effectively.
To give the benchmark, if we assume most people are at about 10%, they want to up their skill level to about 30% and then forget the rest. The old 80-20, a little bit skewed there, but a lot of things you don't need to know, the advanced things you don't, but there's that gap in the middle between what you don't know and what you should know that is costing you time every day. Every day you don't know it, you're sitting at your desk, you're losing time you don't need to because you're trying to figure things out for yourself. And any technology you've got, all you care about is three things. Does it help you track where you have to be? Does it help you track what you have to do? And does it help you with the information that impacts those two issues? And that, if you have that mindset with the technology, you won't get lost in the tricks. You'll get focused on how it can help you with those key points.
Yeah, you got to get to be very careful, don't you, with the toys and just pressing around all day on all your little gadgets and then going nowhere fast. I find them. In fact, I I've actually found the most disorganised people are the gadget people. So just to let you know,
I've had this issue when working with. I've had this issue when working with IT people, and the assumption is because they know the technology, they're productive. And I said, well, that's not necessarily the case. You might know more than the average on the technology. It doesn't mean you're using it from a time management point of view.
Yeah. Actually, I've yet to come across someone who is an IT person who is well organised. It's quite interesting.
So the other point, your question was, how do they take control of email? Far more important than any of that is the expectation they have with the people they deal with, whether it's colleagues they work with or customers. And if you start working with someone, you start some sort of project with someone, a simple conversation at the start, which goes like this: listen, if you need to get hold of me urgently, Lorraine, call me on the mobile. If it's not urgent, then shoot me an email and I'll respond within, and you nominate a time frame. And that way you're managing the expectation of when they can expect a response. Otherwise, in their head, they might think that an hour is a good response time. And if you've taken four hours, they think you're unproductive. They think you're inefficient. And I've seen people's reputation, slashed as them being very ineffective because the expectations weren't laid out. And I had one client where a whole problem occurred because he was away sick and the provider, the supplier, had notified him via email that a certain issue might occur. And he was away sick, he didn't get the email, and he said, look, you should have called me. And this guy said, gee, that's a big expectation. So if you really hear about it in customer service, it's even more important in email management. Really outline, listen, here's when you can expect me to respond from the point of view of how it saves them time. If you are clear on the policies of how to use email, by that I mean when you send an email, for example, be really, really clear in the headline so that the person knows straight away what you want.
So what do you say to people who work in councils and don't respond?
You and I have had this conversation. I've worked with some council members, and I've found them to be lovely people, but some of them, the truth is they're drowning in so many emails, it might be that what you're sending gets lost, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately it happens to be mine that get lost, yeah.
But look at that. What's the email, whether you're working with one person or whether you work with 5 or 15, what is the agreed etiquette for usage of email? And I guarantee for most people it'll be implicit, not explicit, meaning, common sense should prevail. And if you think that, there's a lot of room there where people can make their own interpretations, and it means you'll start CCing people unnecessarily. You'll send emails with headlines such as re-hello, which tell you nothing about the content. You'll waste time you don't need to because people are expecting you to reply quickly. Little things, but they save so much time if you make them explicit. Here's how we use email. Clear headlines, don't CC needlessly, and most importantly, this is particularly important if you've got people under a certain age, say under 30, you must explain that if there's anything ambiguous, they must not email, they need to call. Because they think by emailing, they've spoken.
Yes.
They think they've communicated, and they haven't. They'll often say, yeah, I spoke to Paul, and when you think it through, you realise that what they mean is they've emailed Paul, and in their mind it's dealt with. But email is so open to misinterpretation that you need to make sure that they've actually communicated, you know, over the phone or face-to-face for important things that are ambiguous.
Absolutely, yeah.
Does that give you
some good tips. Yeah, absolutely. I like that's what you mentioned there about having email etiquette. What are the expectations? Can people expect a contact from you within immediately or 24 hours, whatever it is? I think that's very important because often people expect a response then and there. What do you think about people who put on? I used to have this too on my autoresponder. Basically, every time you send an email, they get an autoresponder back saying, thanks, we got your email. We'll respond to you within the next 24 hours or something like that. That sort of thing, that can be very frustrating, can't it?
To get it, you mean? To get the responder?
Yeah, especially if you're emailing someone a number of times.
It's frustrating for the recipient, but it's really good for the person who has sent the responder. I give you one quick example. One guy set up, he was getting so many CC mails in his work group that he set up a rule in Outlook, which you can do. You can set up rules in Outlook on how to respond to certain emails as they come in. If you don't know how to do that, you should check it out because it's a very useful tool. And what he did was he set up a rule that said any time he gets CC mail, it would respond with a message automatically. And the message said, thank you for your CC mail, but I don't check CC mail. If it's important in any way, please call me on this number or email me directly asking what you'd require. Which is
that's
pretty
clever, isn't it?
It's pretty assertive way of outlining, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah,
he was drowning in CC mail that wasn't necessary for him to get.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, well, that's a tip to take on board, that's for sure. Okay, so any more innovative strategies so you can leverage your time and achieve more with less effort with the technology?
Okay, one of the, and I apologise, I think we got to two or three keys for the high-performance workplace. The key that we didn't touch on, which will answer your question here, is to make it an innovative workplace. And that is a general piece of advice, so it's not helpful unless we make it specific. But I, whenever I run workshops, I always ask the group, tell me one thing you've done in the last month to see if it saved time. One thing you've tested out to see if it was quicker or save time or save money. And inevitably, there's a silence. And the reason I ask is I'm trying to gauge, do these people experiment or are they working purely out of habit? And I tell you, most people, you can guess, are working purely out of habit. And I had one guy who was snoozing a reminder from 2 years ago. It was on Outlook and kept popping up. I was doing a coaching session with him and it kept popping up. And I looked at it and it was 2 years old. And I said, why have you got a reminder? I don't think you're going to do it. It's 2 years old. He said, oh, yeah. Yeah. I always ask, why was he at that point? And people say, well, maybe he didn't know how to, you know, dismiss the reminder. It's not that. It's that he was working purely out of habit. And once the habit is established, it's not questioned. So regularly, it's good to say, okay, this week, what's one thing I can try that will experiment and just see, does it save time? One lady, one client, she was very annoyed to find that she had to take a detour to work because there were roadworks. When she arrived at the job, she realised it was a quicker way, to her amazement. So she saved half an hour a week because accidentally she was forced to take a different way to work, and she thought she knew the fastest way, but she didn't because she did a little experiment there. Now, everyone is sitting with some kind of opportunity in front of them that they could use to save time. They just don't see it because they're working out of habit. Now, I think you give some
We do get stuck in it, right, don't we?
Yeah, well, you give some good tips on auditing what you do.
Yeah. And that's why, like, for those of you, running a business, it's important to have people on the outside looking in because you do get stuck in that rut and you can't see the forest for the trees. You've been doing things the same old, and you think you know the answers, but all it takes is from someone from the outside who can see what you're doing to show you a shortcut to get the results that you want. And sometimes, and just all these tips that you're mentioning now, Elliot, they are so simple, they are so useful. All you got to do is actually do it.
And the thing that, to make it self-perpetuating, it's good to have someone outside looking in and saying, look, you're missing this and you're not, using that to your capacity that you could. But for yourself, keep that spirit of experimentation alive. The attitude that you see in children where they're constantly experimenting and trying different ways, young children who just naturally experiment, that's something you want to look at recapturing. Because once it's a habit, your brain says, right, that's law. That's fact rather than opinion. And that's how it's done. And you've got to say, right, you know what? And I always use this analogy. If your doctor said you can only work 4 hours each day, otherwise your health is just going to take too much of a battering, so you have to cut whatever you're doing. You have to halve it, if most people are doing an eight-hour day. How would you do it? But you've still got to get the same output. Get yourself thinking beyond your own capacity, and you'll start coming up with ideas that can...
And that's an interesting point, too. Your work always expands to fill the time. So if you have got 8 hours, you fill it.
It's powerful, isn't it? When you have four, you're amazing what you get done in four, by the way, because your focus is much greater. But my very beautiful wife, she's a bit of a lone ranger where she'll think, right, how can I get this done? Because she's an only child. She's used to having to do it all herself. And sometimes I've got to say, no, you think of how you can get it done without you physically doing it. Because you're being the hero there unnecessarily. You want to try and leverage things around you.
So listen to that, all you only children out there. I can relate to that because I'm an only child too.
Oh, okay.
So, solo
thinking. The solo player.
Yeah, absolutely. So how to create momentum every day.
Okay, this is a great one. I was waiting for Virgin Blue to deliver me from the Gold Coast where I was working, not playing, unfortunately, on that one, home. And, of course, the flight was delayed, so I went to the bookshop. And I opened this book up. I can't remember what the book was, but it had a whole chapter on momentum. And I just started reading it. And I realized it was the big key missing in a lot of the time management. A lot of the time management is logical. You start the day, you plan out and so on. But the state you're in, the momentum you have when you start the day has a big impact on how you feel. People love ticking things off because they feel like they're getting things done. The feeling of getting things done is important. Even if it's delusional, it's really important to have. So the thing, most people start the day, I'm generalising here, with checking emails. Go in, have a chat, boot up Outlook or whatever it is. Maybe they've already got the BlackBerry and the emails come in. Now, I would suggest before that process, do three simple tasks that you know give you a sense or a feeling of having momentum. And you can look in the past, look to days when you were really focused. What were the certain things you did that really gave you a sense of taking charge? Because that feeling, even though it's just a feeling, will make you more productive in getting things done. But it can't be anything that relies on anyone else. It can't be, I'll start the day making a sale. Because that relies on someone else to do something for you to then, you can't give over your momentum to other people's whims. It's got to be down to something you can control that's entirely within your power there. And it's very important for people in sales because that is something where you really need to have your energy going and your focus going. To start the day doing three simple tasks that you know give you a sense of, right, I'm making things happen, and then let the ripple effect of that go through the rest of the day.
Very good. So I think that the last point you were going to talk about today was how to maintain your energy levels throughout the day to maintain your peak state. You did talk about, you know, your health and your fitness. Is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Yes. A couple of simple things we've found through research and common sense, starting with the fact that, I don't know if you saw a film called Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith. Have you seen that?
Yes, that was very good, yeah.
And there's a scene in there where he talks about how he saves time because he doesn't have the luxury of staying till 7 p.m. like his colleagues. He's got a child he has to pick up from daycare, so he has to be gone by a certain time. So, for example, he doesn't hang up the phone. He clicks it off and dials the next number. He saves a certain number of minutes. But one thing I didn't agree with, he didn't drink water because he didn't want to waste time going to the toilet. Now, that's a bad one.
Yes, definitely.
I was doing a work at a client's office and I went to the restroom and this poster greeted me when I walked into the toilet that said, "What colour is your urine?" Sorry, guys, very base here. And it had a whole chart based on the colour showing your hydration level. And the more research I did, the more it showed that the more hydrated you are, the more effective you are. The more hydrated you are, the more patient, the better at decision-making, better at maintaining concentration for longer periods of time. So that little point, drink more water, it's very, very simple, but you'd be amazed how many people don't do it. Drinking more water makes you more productive.
And a simple tip on, I was going to say, and a very simple practical way of doing that, have a water bottle, have a jug, whatever, sitting on the desk. Have, you know, your water, you know, in the car, in your bag, have a bottle of something, water, everywhere you go so you can't forget it. Just watch out for the 38 degree days.
I tell you something funny, though. I saw that recently at my friend's desk, where the water bottle has a timer, and if a period of time has elapsed where you haven't taken a sip, it does a little beep to remind you, which really takes outsourcing of reminders to a whole new level. That might annoy you, but for some of you, you might need it, or you just won't take the water level you need. Simple thing, drink water, you're more productive. The other thing that you do completely naturally and perfectly from the moment you're born, but that tends to get less effective as you get older, is breathing. So if you see, I was looking at my nephew who's 2 months old, and he just had this lovely, natural, deep breathing. But for most people, adults, I see a lot of hunchbacks, poor posture, sitting at the desk, leading to headaches and all sorts of, you know, circulation problems. But what it really does is it really hampers your breathing. And again, you're not as effective if you don't breathe properly. So two or three times a day, just take two or three deep breaths just to really get more circulation to the brain, you know, recharge, detox, all sorts of wonderful benefits. Water and breathing, simple things, but again, free of charge that you can do.
So who would have thought water, breathing, taking a few deep breaths is going to help you be more productive? Well, guess what? It certainly does.
Some people know it might help, but they don't really make it a practice to do it. And
I agree with you. Yeah.
On a sideline, in a parallel life, I teach Tai Chi, and the big focus there is your posture. And people's posture is really poor when they're sitting at their desk, and that's something that also impacts your energy.
Exactly. We should do another call, Elliot, around all the health issues associated with working in the office environment, because there's so many of them that are preventable. I couldn't imagine you sitting down for more than 2 seconds at a time.
Well, there you go. When I do, I'm in a proper horse stance from the Sifu. But there's one more I didn't mention with the email side that I really want to make a point of, and that is, where possible, check emails at certain times of the day, and in between those times, focus on something else that you're doing that's important. Don't have the alert popping up telling you whenever an email arrives. You can go in and disable the alert, and you can actually have it where you check the emails when you want to, not get told every time they arrive. It's a real killer of your focus.
I couldn't agree with you more, yeah. And if you're going to break that down even more, you may choose certain times of the day, and it could well be, you know, first thing in the morning, before lunch, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe set time frames,
I'll add to that, some people can't handle that kind of distance, so I'll start them at half hour increments and then build them up.
Okay.
So I used to say, well, here's what I say now, if you're best in the morning, then only check them at set times in the morning. If you're not so good in the afternoon, you're not quite as focused and productive, then check them whenever you want in the afternoon, because the cost to your productivity is not as high. But if you're at your peak state, your best state, and you're wasting that time checking emails as they arrive, then that's a much greater cost.
I agree. That's good, Elliot.
I'll give you, and as I'm talking to you, I'm getting some ideas. I'll give you one more. How's that? And then we'll
do you need any more ideas?
But I wanted to show a combination of the time management and the technology. If you use Outlook or whatever tool and you boot up that software, the first thing you see normally is the inbox. Now, the problem with that is that it sucks you into the emails and your focus just goes with it, versus setting up Outlook so that the first thing you see is a view called Outlook Today or your calendar, where your focus is drawn to where do you have to be, what do you have to do, and then you check the emails. And I've had some clients change it at the server level so that the whole staff, all the staff, when they log in that day, the first thing they see is their schedule and their tasks, and then their emails. Whereas most people, first thing they see is emails, and again, it draws them in ways that aren't always productive.
Yeah, very good. So if you're going to roll out your top 5 tips, what would they be?
Okay, number one, have an email policy in place relating to email as a communication and productivity tool. Everyone knows you shouldn't download porn and you shouldn't have too much space in there, but outline clearly the lines of communication and when you're going to your response times. I would get training to an above average level on the software you're using every day, because that's something that is a drainer of your time. I would make sure you go for a walk each morning, or some sort of exercise to get your system going, whether you like yoga or Tai Chi or whatever it is that gets your internal system flowing there. And I would really focus on what is it that gives you momentum. Momentum, momentum, momentum. And lastly, the big thing that people don't do enough, I think, is review what you have done, looking for areas you can say well done and pat yourself on the back, and review what you've done and say, well, you know what, that really isn't working. I need to change that a little bit.
I think it's very important. Right? Yeah, absolutely. So we've got number one, email policy. in etiquette, 2, training, 3, exercise each day, 4, focus on what gives you momentum, and 5, review what you have done. 5 simple but very powerful tips to help you manage your emails, master your technology, and increase your productivity. So, Elliot, that's been great, and I know you could talk forever because you've got so much great stuff there. Where do people go to find... What was that?
By the way, I think you're really good at, with the fifth tip, reviewing. You're good at saying, well, hang on, what are you doing that for? You know, that's rubbish. You're wasting too much time there. Try this. You're quite good at cutting through that and saying, that's terrible. That's good. More of that, less of this.
That's right. Thank you. So anyone on the call today or anyone listening to this CD would like to know more about you, where can they go?
The website is www.findtime.com.au. That's the best place to go to find out more about me. And if you want to, there's an email management report I've got there that if you want to opt in for that and get that, that's got some tips and also a link to some tutorials using Outlook. And there's some useful resources there. So findtime.com.au.
Great name. Well, thank you so much, Elliot, for being on today's call. I'm just going to see if we just happen to have anyone on the line who'd like to ask you any questions. I'll just double check. Is there anyone there who has a question for Elliot while we have him on the line?
Yeah, I do.
Hi, who have we got there?
Joe, how are you going, Lorraine?
Oh, hi, Joe. I didn't recognise your voice.
Oh, that's all right,
go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Look, I'm actually on my Outlook right now, and I'm thinking, right, that's a great idea that Elliot made about, viewing the calendar rather than the actual inbox.
How do you do it?
How they said it, because I'm trying to scamper through it, and I can't seem to find it.
Joe, do you have a folder there above calendar that says something like home or Joe or mail, you know, something that says Outlook today, perhaps?
Mailbox Joe, all folder, all
mail
folders.
Click on Mailbox Joe. Click on Mailbox Joe.
Yeah.
What do you see there?
Aha, I've come up with my Outlook today, which is obviously my calendar.
Exactly.
And tasks.
Do you see where it says? You see where it says Customize Outlook Today on the top right-hand corner?
Yep, gotcha.
Click on that.
Yeah.
And the first box at the top, Start When Starting, goes directly to...
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
And you can customize how many days you want to see of the week, how many tasks, in what order, priority, due date, etc. But you will love it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That is brilliant.
I really...
Come on.
You've made his day now.
It's a great question, Joe, and anyone listening, they'll like that because it's so simple, but it's such a help in starting the day with the right focus.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's setting you the focus of what you should be doing rather than just, taking in all this stuff that comes in every day. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And unless emails are genuinely telling you you've made 10 sales or you've won $100,000 and it's not from Nigeria, unless they're telling you that, they rob you of momentum and focus. So if you start the day with emails, it's usually not a great start.
Yeah.
Mm. Thank you for that question.
Do
we have anyone else on the line? We'll take one more question. No? Okay.
Are you there?
Okay, then, everyone. First of all, I want to thank you all for being on today's call, and especially you, Elliot, from findtime.com.au. So make sure you check out Elliot's website for some very valuable resources to help you be more productive and more profitable. And on that note, I just want to quickly remind you that our next Q&A, question and answer call, is on Tuesday the 21st of February at 10 a.m. Vic time. One more thing to say before we go. There's such valuable information on these calls that definitely save you a lot of time, money, and stress. Now, if it's valuable for you, it's going to be valuable also for your friends and associates who are in business to hear this information. So a suggestion to you, why don't you tell them about the club? You can even let them come and have a look at it. They can trial it for 2 months, and you can actually be benefited for it as well. So if you go along to productivityqueen.com/affiliate.php, just register your details there and use a special link when emailing your friends and clients, etc. And it's a great way to help others and also be rewarded for something that you would do anyway. So this is Lorraine Perry here, the Productivity Queen, getting tongue-tied, signing off, and have a profitable and productive couple of weeks. See you later.